Rolling.
Rolling.
SUV, either there's like two speeds for them. They have like 95 miles an hour on the highway taking a turn with an SUV that's going to tip over, or 20 miles an hour in the rain because they're deathly afraid something's going to happen to their massive car that they bought. You know, it's the same people that like try to go down the little alleys that I live by and are like, it's too big, and you're like, why did you buy that car? Sorry, when I first moved to this country, and this is all the pre stuff, so it'll stay in, but you'll probably be bored by it, but when I first moved to this country, because this is what happens, I had this today on one of my day job calls, but like, you know, you love to pick on an American on whatever the trend is in my country, in this country. And that just happens. We pick on the English the same way in America. But when I moved over here, obviously Americans were the ones driving the massive SUVs. We still do. You know, the very, very whatever. And man, the amount of times, oh, mate. You know, it's the same thing like with a clutch. Oh, mate. You know, driving those SUVs. And now everybody on the block drives an SUV. So I'm like, what was that all about, guys? So it's all right. I still love you, England. All right. I haven't even had any tea yet. So what are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of What Are You Guys Talking About? We are here today to talk about The Matrix Resurrections, which I will leave everything for first impressions. I will say nothing. I will move straight on to brass tacks and talk a little about what the show is. So if you're a first-time listener, our show talks about stuff that we like, basically. We are Edward Burgos and Jason Schroe, two of the pretty much only members of Love Victoria Productions that are permanent, at least. Eric, you get kind of an honorary mention because we've always kind of considered you an honorary LVP guy, and he'll be listening to this. But we talk about what we're watching and how that influences us. Sometimes we're really busy with stuff. At the moment, we're not crazy busy with anything. So this is more of us kind of getting the creative spark and seeing where we're going with stuff. But it's a chance, you know, for you to listen to what filmmakers think about and how we do things. And we are as indie as it come, you know what I mean? We both have day jobs. We both have no money. And we both just love it. You know, we do it for the passion, not for the fact that we get paid big bucks. And so, you know, I always think that makes us a bit better at our job than some people. And we'll talk about that a bit as we get into today's discussion. But if you're looking to catch us, you might be listening to us on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, also another really good place for us. Or you can get us on Spotify. Any of the other platforms should be available, except for, as I said, Anchor FM. I'm not sure we're on that feed. If there is somewhere that you normally listen to your podcast and you caught this one and you want to catch it there, then just drop us a line in the comment section and we will be sure to add it to your favorite podcast RSS feed. Otherwise, check us out on our website, www.lovictoriaproductions. That's Spanish, so it's lovictoriaproductions.com. Everything's there. It's huge. It's a mega site. It's awesome. And it's not going to be there forever because every time I look at it, I say, oh, really need to pare this back.
It's but, a lot of content.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, certain pages will take you. Like if you go to, okay, so this will appear within the feature film section of, you know, W-A-Y-G-T-A, Wade GTA, I think is what we shortened it to. But anyways, it'll appear on the feature films, and that page will take, because there's like something like 40, 50 podcasts that have to load onto that, so it takes a while. Not a whole long while, but it will definitely do that. And we need to get that fixed so people can go straight to what they want to listen to. But that has everything. So that has the podcast, that has the Dirty 20 videos, which Ed has just sent to me another one today, which will be going up at some point this week. We're working on a one-shot, which is going to be done again because our fans really like that. And Ed has told me up his sleeve he has another Carnivale Lore, which is my personal favorite, even though I've never played the game. but we also have our short films. I'm probably going to be talking to Ed about trying to get another short film done over the summer. And if we get any of these TV shows that we want to do, they will go up there as well. So check it out. Otherwise, social media is your friend and our friend as well. We are both on Facebook, so you can easily find us there, or you can find Love Victoria Productions on Facebook. On Instagram, we are Enano LVP or Jazzy J. Shiro. On Twitter, we're at Mouth Love Victoria or at Ananoski Prod. Just check some of my tweets, he'll be in there, so if you don't know the spelling for that. LinkedIn, we have a company page, so you can listen, or you can, you know, pick up everything from there. And then finally, we also have a TikTok, which is unused because it's wintertime and I don't tend to film anything in the wintertime, at least not outside. But LVP Film Life, if I get a hair up to what else to put up there, I will. But at the moment, it's just waiting for the forest to get nice again so I can send you nice forest pictures and intros to other things. But that's everything. In terms of, we usually spend a couple minutes talking about what we're working on. It hasn't changed much from last week. Ed's Ryan's been busy, I've been busy, so he hasn't had a chance really to look at my script yet. But what we are pining away at. And then I'm working on two other scripts. And hopefully, come springtime, we will get a troupe together. And I really do mean a troupe. You know, whoever wants to be there will be there. And we will film some stuff and get it done.
I put a iron in the fire last week with a good mutual friend of ours about some magic content.
Oh, excellent.
So I'm just kind of trying to get it to a point where then you can say yes or no.
It's funny. It's a good thing to kind of tell the listeners about, because that kind of, this is the stuff that would be, we do have an entire section on the website and within SoundCloud that talks about this inside LVP Studios. So listen, like, I love Magic the Gathering, and Ed can tell you 2 years ago, I, like, nearly went pro, because I love the game so much. I played it when I was a kid, and I started playing it again. There were a couple problems with it, though. One, it was really expensive, so if you want to get in trouble with your wife, play Magic, because when you come home with a box that costs $100, and you throw away 75% of the cards in the box, your wife definitely going to give you that look. You know what I mean? I remember there used to be guys that would like take their wives to the games, and it was like, I don't think that makes things any better. I had her play it once, and she was like, this is bollocks, this game. It's like, this makes no sense. So, but I love it. It's a very intricate game. It's kind of like chess, but the rules change. So it's not like chess. There was a community of guys that played at the old store that we were at. They don't anymore. And I've been desperate. So the Hidden Dirty 20 episode was supposed to be a Magic. But the problem is, I don't actually have time like Ed does to film this stuff, because my day job is just fast-paced like
and
that.
And a family and all the other things.
Yes. So we found out I had limited time. So I told Ed, like, I need producers. I need people. I will be more than happy to sense check and to help these things along. But unfortunately, I don't have time myself to film all this stuff, but I know the guys who did. So I mentioned some names to Ed, and now he's gone out there, which is good, and we'll see what we can do. Because I really do think people would benefit from a channel on this. Much like Dirty 20, if you haven't seen that on our website, is basically your masterclass in D&D. Like, there's pretty much not a topic that isn't at least mentioned within the 110 videos that we've done so far on it. And I'm really proud of that now. Like, I'm just so proud of how comprehensive it is as far as telling you the basics of how to get into D&D, what's fun, what's not fun, what's topical, what are people into. So I'd like to do the same thing for Magic the Gathering, because I believe, just like I believe there's more mass appeal for Dungeons & Dragons, I believe there's more mass appeal for Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. I believe certain people, maybe especially like video gamers, would love the intricacy and the complicated nature of the game itself, because it's not hard to learn. It's just once you get into
the
sets,
depth, isn't it?
So, and there's always, you know, the cool thing about Magic the Gathering is the best way to play, and the way that I probably was the best at myself is drafting, which means you go into the store, you get 3 packs from one of those booster boxes you've been seeing, and they're opened and just circulated around a group of people. You take one card out and you make a deck out of it. It's the best way to play, because every single person, at least on the cards, is on a level playing field. Now, don't ever believe for the life of you that some of those guys aren't the biggest geniuses in the world. That's the other thing that can be really impressive, is to see. And I play with a bunch of young people, so I will say, you know, I am one of the old men of the group, and it's wonderful to see like these 20-year-olds, and even like the best, like the 13 or 14-year-olds that are just geniuses. Let's try this card trick, and let's try this card trick, and let's try it. And all of a sudden they've killed you in 3 rounds, and you're like, I'm not even mad, that was amazing.
Yeah, for me it's the pretty pictures. I love the artwork.
Oh my god, it's amazing artwork, right? Depending on the set. I mean, they're coming up with one you're gonna love, because Kira, the Japanese one's coming back.
Kurikami or something like
that. Kurigawa.
That's right.
I think
it's like
And when it all came out before, people didn't like it as much, because it came in between, because there's like a story base and then there's like fun stuff. I think Magic is leaning much more towards the fun stuff.
Is it cyberpunky?
No, it's Japanese. Like, it's total Japanese. And that's why it was a bit weird for Magic. But Magic is trying it. They got a new sales director, and I was always mad because I didn't apply for that job.
But I saw
the post and had it up in my house for like a week, like, you really should apply for this job, Jason. And I didn't. But new sales director, and I like the trend, because this is another thing that, like, these aren't niche games, even though they're played at niche shops. Like, people would enjoy this stuff if they learned it. You know what
I mean? It's very cool. I mean, I'll admit, I don't really play the game. Like I say, I love the artwork. I think it's one of the best sources for fantasy artwork that there is.
I guess it just depends what you're up to. I mean, you know, first impressions on Magic the Gathering. Who's it for? Who's it for? Well, a lot of poker players, and that's where I got it from. So as you've heard some of the stories on Love Victoria Productions, I was a professional poker player for a little while. I love poker. Like, I just did. My grandfather taught it to me when I was really young, and I really enjoyed playing it my whole life. But Magic is like that. It's all about reading cards and reading people. So that's why I've always enjoyed that game. Cool. So we're working on that too now. That's great, Ed. That's really great news. Okay, so... yeah, we're going to do first impressions, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what we watched this week that doesn't deal with The Matrix Resurrection.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back for the full discussion to kind of follow up on what we said in first impressions. But first impressions, and I always let Ed go first.
You let me go first. You force me to go first.
I'm more than happy to go first this time.
No, no, no. I'll go first. I'll go first.
Okay. I love that. No. This is my time. My time, Jason.
I really liked it.
Did you?
I really did. Good. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Why are you saying it like that, though?
Because you had seen it before, and you're generally very good about not, like, ruining things, and maybe I'm spoiling what you're about to talk about in your first impressions, but you were a little bit like, it's a bit meh. Not very, but a bit. And so that put me in a...
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
No, but this is the point. And then I also... like you, sometimes I'm flicking through and I see Vox or Variety or someone. Someone had a headline which was not very complimentary towards Resurrections. And that also kind of put me a bit on guard. Because I had fairly high expectations for this.
I think everyone did, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that both those things brought my expectations to an adequate level. Not like a fanboy level. Which I think I would have, if you hadn't said anything, and if I hadn't seen like a headline or two, I might have gone in and been very disappointed.
Okay.
So who's this for? I think anyone who really loved The Matrix and was okay with the sequels, recognizing that they're not as good as the first one, which is me. That's my category. Right? Yeah. Like, I'll still rewatch Reloaded and Revolutions. I'll cringe and I'll, like, yell at the screen every
so often. I still have to bring it out of the plastic. But my mom bought me, this is so lame, but it was on my wish list. And my mom bought me the UHDs of, you can watch them when you come over if you want.
Yeah,
if you want to. Like,
I might do, he's dog sitting
for me on Saturday. So, yeah, like, if you want to watch all three of them, and they're right there.
I might just do that because I have been wanting
They will be cherry on the PlayStation. Yeah. So.
And that was honestly one of the really cool things about this one as well was. Visually, it was just so cool. It took me back to that kind of time. And yeah, like I say, if you're a fan of The Matrix, and I think you'll really enjoy this. I think if you go in, though, with super high expectations that this is going to, like, fix everything and this is going to be the sequel that we wanted, you might be disappointed, I think. Because there's a lot of holes that I recognize. And I'm like, yes, I see that as not being great, but I'm okay with it, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. No, it does. I'm trying my new techniques now. So one of the things I'm doing in my day job is I get access to learning programs, one which is with LinkedIn Learning. So the first class I took, just because it goes straight to my boss, was... how to be a better listener.
Oh, nice. I like it. That meant a lot to me that you just sat there and listened to what I was saying.
So hard for me.
So, you know,
it's so hard for me.
But you know what? It worked.
But I'm telling you, watching a video about what that's for, like, other people, because the problem is it has nothing to do, that part of me, guys, has nothing to do with me not liking other people. It has to do with just the opposite. It has me being a bit narcissistic. Like, I like to make my own arguments and I'm always in my own head, so... just a bit. Just a side bit.
But again, like, honestly, you know, I think that makes you more lovable.
Oh, bless. So, I mean, it's interesting because you say, who is the film for? And I turn that into a question because that was my problem with the film.
Go on.
Who is this film for? So, talk about people that are fans of The Matrix. The Matrix is one of the most stylistically fashioned. It influenced so many things, but... at 1999, when it comes out, it is a pinnacle of film at the time.
Yeah.
Something that blows everybody away. Yeah. You know, had new technology.
It was a new horizon for action films that, let's be honest, had kind of reached a level of staleness you know, due mostly to their popularity, right? Like the 70s, 80s, 90s.
That's right. In the 90s, that was largely because we had lots of, you know, that's the Jerry Bruckheimer era. Jerry Bruckheimer, who's a very talented producer, so don't.
Michael Bay.
Everything, I'm not saying that they're not, but they love explosions. They don't like story.
Yeah. 100%.
So The Matrix was the opposite, and it was alternative. The other thing that I was really keen on in the original, and even throughout the two sequels, which were disappointing, the second one less disappointing than the third, but ultimately the story trajectory goes in a direction that I don't think anyone really liked. Then I look at this film, and I agree with Ed, and actually one of my friends, Z, that woman I'm always telling you about, she just got back from New York, Z Richter Welch, she's awesome. She saw this, and she had posted, it was adequate, and it did what it's supposed to, I enjoyed it, but... Yeah. And that's how I felt.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, I like the fact that you're patching the holes in your old story in a really cool way, and making this interesting. And I will say my favorite bit, if you like the acting in the original Matrix, this is... Both Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves back to magic. Like, it just, they were they are the two figureheads of this thing. The problem I
could watch those two on screen, like, so I wanted to watch John Wick again.
It's just Keanu Reeves, man. He's apparently married to Winona Ryder, you know. Like, they got married at Dracula. No, they were actually married by a priest to Dracula. And it's the joke. And he always jokes with her. He said, you know, we never divorced or anything. And that was a real priest, so.
That's funny.
But, I mean, he's a guy. So again, Keanu Reeves is the person that kind of drew me into film because... Yeah. He was a guy that I kind of laughed at his acting career, but watched all his films. Yeah,
100%.
And then it was so back and forth where he would do a Bill and Ted, but then he would do a Feeling Minnesota. And I was like, this guy's got such depth to him. Why is he in shit films all the time?
Yeah.
But he's not. Like, he's in, he bounces back and forth. He's a bit like Johnny Depp was the same to me. Like kept nowadays very different. But back in the day, those two used to dump in and out of good movies, bad films, good movies, bad films. Nowadays, Johnny Depp doesn't really seem to pick up too much. But sorry.
I think that... he, when cast in the right role, I think he's fabulous, Keanu. I think that perhaps his range is not quite as acty as, you know, Shakespearean-trained actors. He's one of those guys
you should love as an actor to read his story, because the man has, like, nearly died three times. He has all these issues.
Lost his girlfriend.
And he's always been the nicest.
Super generous. I actually read that he paid for all the crew to go to San Francisco to, like, watch the premiere.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's a kind of guy that he just would get along well with Ed and I, you know. And as in, I have a bit of money myself, thanks to the success I've had in my life. And Ed knows I'm not the most generous person in the world, but I'm not the kind of person that also believes in not having fun with your friends or people who need it. Like, I get really pissed off. I get at people who are tight, that have money and are tight with their money, because it's like, come on, man. Like,
that's how they keep it, though. That's the problem.
I guess that's what they tell you, but it's like, you know, I think you can keep your money and still
spread,
be nice to
spread
people.
The love.
Exactly.
Spread
I think you can love. Keep your money and be nice to people at the same time.
And Carrie Ann Moss, man, is she, and I know we're still in first impressions, but I'm dropping this here so people can ruminate on it.
Okay.
Is she the most underused actress of her generation?
Okay, so that's the other part of the first impressions that I want to get out of the way. Like, the problem I had is and this comes down to Lana Wachowski. Mm-hmm. Like, this was a railroaded piece. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lana Wachowski clearly has some messages she wants out about this. And one of the big problems with The Matrix was the way Carrie Ann and the story in The Matrix is the way that Carrie Ann Moss's character, Trinity, is thrown away.
Yeah.
She is a side character. She is the you know, it's cliche now, but in the 90s, that's how you made films. You had to have a romantic interest. Yeah. And the problem was, it wasn't always written that way. Mm-hmm. And so when people, especially feminists, which is a great thing to do, complained and said, you took this really powerful character, like, and you badass, make her be, you made her beholden to the men in the show. Like, why would you do that? Like, why did you need to do that? One of the greatest lines in the original Matrix is when Keanu looks at her and says, I thought you were a guy. You know, it's that whole, like, and the problem was, like, you know, the Wachowskis, for better or for worse, played it out that way in the original. And this is their way, which makes sense to me based on their story and their trajectory, why they had to rectify that. And that is the crux of the Matrix Resurrections. Mm. Don't get it twisted. And that's what I mean. It's not necessarily an adequate finish to everything. Mm-hmm. It's fixing her character.
Right.
That's that, the that, whole that point of the show. The main I'm not spoiling goal. It for you by saying that. I just want you to go in knowing that this isn't going to rewrite the world. And that's my second thing I would warn you about. This, there's an issue with the fashion and the style in this. Listen, The Matrix defined fashion for the alternative sector in 1999 and probably for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
People were wearing it. I remember going to Spain for the first time and being called Le Matrix by the French girls I used to live next to because I wore this coat that made me look like that. Like, it just was a style. And, and a lot the of people adopted it. And then it kind of, you know, then I think of Grandma's Boy and it kind of wore off after a while because that's one of the jokes about that guy. And that is like, how much did that coat cost?
Well, it became a cliche, right? It was so influential on the world.
Right, and because those second two films didn't hold up that, so it wasn't able to carry the fashion. Now, I can't tell whether they were trying to go back to that or whether they were saying, no, millennials would dress this way or Generation Y would dress this way. They got it wrong.
Okay,
the fashion is so confused, it just doesn't stick with you. It becomes almost benign.
Okay.
And so that's a problem because the fashion for the original Matrix, which is one of the reasons I love it, you know, was one of the things that draws you to it. And here, they're just very unsure of themselves. And I say that because the way it's projected in the movie is that they're very confident in themselves. Hence all the dialogues and things that happen, which we'll talk about more in the main discussion.
Okay.
But there's a big confusion there of people sounding really confident about this is the way it is and this is how it looks. But underneath, knowing they're not quite sure whether everyone's going to buy it or not because it just was too close to the old one. You're either going to blow it away with something brand new and make it look different because we are 20 years down the line now or 10 years down the line. No, 10 years down the line now. Fashion has changed, so you've got to adapt to that. And I just didn't feel like Lana and her team had the pulse of the current fashion, current trends, things like that. I think they tried, but it sounded like a guy like me, and this is why it's ironic me saying this, it sounds like a guy like me trying to create fashion for 20-year-olds. Like, it just doesn't work.
Interesting.
So that was my other qualm with it, is it just seemed all that. And we'll talk about, you know, that's where I can get into some of the other actors and actresses in this talk about why that wasn't it. But let's pause it there. You've had your kind of first impressions. Sorry. So please feel free to turn us off now. Go watch the film or don't watch the film and wait for next week. But what did you watch this week, Ed?
Well, I did watch some things. I managed to watch Encanto. Have you seen?
I haven't. I'm waiting to watch it with my daughter.
Oh, my heart. It's beautiful.
I know.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. I also caught, again, I'm in a bit of a kind of true crime thing. So I watched this thing called Evil Genius. And
that was on Netflix, right? Yeah,
let me tell you, man. Like, at first I was like, nah, okay.
Right. It's all about a phone call and this thing. And like they set up the trailer for it perfectly. Yeah. It was like, what's going on?
So, it's about this guy. And I saw a comedy that had this premise, and I was like, wait, what? But it's a guy who gets a bomb strapped to him and goes to rob a bank with a note saying, I have someone strapped a bomb to me, give me this much money. And so I was like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, because again, the comedy, it's like, it all works out in the end, right? Let me tell you, this shit don't work out in the end for this guy. Holy fuck. And they have actual footage of the moment when the bomb explodes around his neck.
Is that worth watching it alone just to watch the guy's head blow off?
From that moment on, I was kind of gripped. I think
they got you there, yeah.
Yeah, like that was intense.
Because it's not Saw, it's real life.
Yeah. And I've never been one for like macabre like stuff.
That's my bag, And I'm not really into it anymore either. It's just I went through 10 years of watching the most vile things.
Right.
And I still can't watch the most vile things.
But that was really good. It's like a 6-part documentary.
Okay.
Like 49 minutes each, so it might be a bit...
Tables turn, baby. Yeah, I ain't got time for 6 parts.
I know. And the other thing that I rewatched, which I'm so glad I did, was Starship Troopers.
Oh man, classic.
I hadn't watched it in a long while, and I was you know doing the whole YouTube thing, watching reactions and stuff like that. And someone did one on Starship Troopers, and I start watching it, and I'm like, damn, I want to watch the film. It's
a quality film.
It's so good.
It's really funny too, because that film, Ed, like when it first came out in America, I hated it because I thought it, I felt it was very anti-American.
Yeah, I was like,
it's making fun of things. It's shit-made film. Like it's camp. And then I got older.
Yeah.
You know, because I think I saw it as a teenager, like a 13 or 14 year old. And then when I got older and like in college and watched it again, you're sitting with a bigger group of people laughing through the whole thing, and you get it. You're like, oh, this is supposed to be camp.
Satire.
It's satire on America, on how, because people don't get that. Like, and it's satire, but it's not. Like, it's even worse now than it was back then. Like,
it's almost prescient.
We're a very militaristic country, guys. Yeah. Like, you know, and this is why anytime you hear us like pissing on the Chinese, just laugh. Like, you know, we're very weaponized.
Yeah,
we're very, you know, people with guns kind of deal. Yeah. And not just people with guns in America, but we want to send our troops. We used to, at least. I'm not sure how keen we are for sending our troops all over the world, but certainly at the time Star Trek Troopers were made, we loved taking our troops, putting them in a naval carrier and saying, like, go take over that country, or go tell those people what they need to do with democracy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and a fresh face, Denise Richards.
Denise Richards, Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris, who's in Resurrections.
And who's the lead on that? That's
it's James Van Der Beek.
Okay, this was before the Hemsworths, so
it would have been
a Hemsworth. Absolutely. It would have been a Hemsworth.
Oh my god, they were
selling. What were they selling? So my daughter loves Donut Time. Donut Time, if you don't know, is a donut shop in London that it started in a food truck behind the place where I used to work. And it's owned by these Australian guys. We're going
to be talking about donuts.
And then they expanded out of this food truck. They now have like 20 locations over London. Everybody loves them. And they're like the £5 donuts. You get one for £5. It's huge. But you know, they all have funny names. And she got the one that had Biscoff on it, which I didn't even know what Biscoff is. She's obsessed with Biscoff. I'm like, fine, have that one. And I can't remember what that one was called, but they had Hemsworth.
Okay.
And I was just, I like was so tempted to buy it, but we were so full from the Chinese, it was like, oh,
should have kept it for me.
Oh, baby. Anytime, baby. You want donuts? Anytime.
Oh, donuts. That's like a real
donut time, man. Oh, man. Donuts. Yeah, donut time.
Krispy Kreme. Tesco sells Krispy Kreme as well.
Man, I can't. Like, I love this country's obsession with Krispy Kreme. Your complete lack of knowledge about Dunkin' Donuts. Like, I'm a Dunkin' Donuts man, not a Krispy Kreme guy. Because Krispy Kreme is smaller and more sugary. Like, they're...
Oh, but they're like crack, man.
No, they're not. Like, they if you have a Dunkin' Donut, you'd rather have it. Because Dunkin' Donut also had the minis. Like, every kid growing up, every birthday party you ever had, or when you had your birthday at school, you would bring in the Dunkin' Donut minis.
Okay. In Korea... called
Munchkins.
Yes. Very delicious. I mean, in Korea, though, I think they weren't up to scratch.
Do they have Dunkin' Donuts in Korea?
Yes, eventually.
No. Yeah. That's like when I used to be a smoker, that was... about 20 years ago now, a long time ago. But I used to have that problem with Camel cigarettes because I smoked Camel Lights. And I was, you know, I'm one of those types of people, guys. The longer you get to know me, and God knows by the time I get too old, I'll be smoking these again. Because I just thought, like, oh, God, I fucking need a Camel Light. But I used to love my Camel Lights. Yeah. Like, that was what I smoked. And I didn't, like, you know, God knows you couldn't give me a Marlboro. Like, if you don't know all the racist shit that's in that thing, like, come on. But no, Camel Lights all the way. And then I went over to Spain. I remember this. And then, man, like, the problem with going to Europe when you're an American is, like, people smoke in America. People smoke in Europe. Like, it was like, and the problem is if you're already a smoker, it's like someone just takes all the chains off and it's like, have some fun. So you're just sitting there, like, chiefing all day long. And then the Camel Lights out there were shit, though. Like, they were horrible. The only thing worse is someone, and you'll know this, someone gave me a pack of BNs.
Bien?
Yeah.
Okay, in Spain.
In Spain.
Okay. And did you ever try Ducados?
No. Okay. It was these Biens because I can't get them out of machines when I was 16. At least.
Yeah,
I'm sure they're not there anymore. But this was why it was also magical. It's like, oh, it's like the 60s again. We're allowed to smoke.
I used to like every taxi that I got in and say, do you mind if I smoke? Yeah, sure. Go for it. In every taxi.
Like, in Korea was no better for that, but in Korea I smoked Inch. I smoked like female cigarettes
out there because I
loved Inch. They were these little tiny cigarettes that I loved. But Camel Lights, I couldn't get good ones in Spain. And then I went back. I remember the next time I went over to Europe, I brought like 4 cartons with me. And I was like, just because I was so particular about it.
So
it's just funny how things can change depending where you're at. But yeah, Dunkin' Donuts over Krispy Kreme. The other reason...
Take me to the States and introduce me to the delicacies of your people. Well,
we can't go to Krispy Kreme in the States because I've had, you know... I've never told you the Krispy Kreme story?
No.
All right, we'll tell on the podcast because I love telling stories on the podcast. Okay. So... When I was 10 years old, they opened the first Krispy Kreme donuts around the corner from where we lived. And no, I'm sorry, I lie. I was 12 because my parents were divorced and I was with my mother.
Mm.
And my mom says, "You want some Krispy Kreme donuts?" I was like, "Yeah, mom, let's try them out."
Mm.
So she goes through and we ordered, like, we couldn't decide what we wanted. So we're like, "Oh, we'll try some of these. Oh, no, no, we'll have some of these." We spent like 15 minutes ordering all this shit up. Then we drive around in the corner for my mom to be like, "Jason, I don't have my wallet." She had to turn to this guy with like 24 donuts and be like, "I'm sorry, I don't have any money. I'll see you later." Embarrassment of 11. Like, I never went back to that place again. And it was there for like 10 years. Okay. And I never went back to Krispy Kreme.
The trauma.
But Dunkin' Donuts was a safe place for me because I could have my coffee and I could have my donuts and no one knew that my mother had bought 24 donuts in that bag. So, do you know what I mean? That's why I don't eat Krispy Kreme.
Oh, Mama Shiro.
She's awesome. Man. I miss my mama. All right, folks. What are we talking about? Oh, I should talk a little bit about...
Yeah, what you watch. What did you watch?
Yeah, I mean, it's more... I haven't watching as much because my work is... you know, I've just started a new job, so I'm working hard with that, and I'm enjoying it, so I'm really sticking at the computer quite a bit these days. But I did get away on the weekend, so I'll mention that first. I saw Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
That's right,
the theater,
yeah.
Part one. Yes. Which I won't spoil for you. It is definitely worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
For my daughter, who is, like, if you didn't know... Catherine, my daughter, is like the biggest Harry Potter fan. So she was insane about it. Becky really enjoyed it as well. For me, I'm like this about everything now, aren't I? Like, I liked it, but I didn't like parts of it. Okay. I'm just really critical of everything, and that's not
how
because
long
I don't
it?
Like the. It's two-parter. The first part's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
See, like,
and we were in those nosebleed seats as well. That's, so my knees were falling asleep.
Yeah, on for you.
And I had to crook my neck
no-no.
To watch, and like, and that's not blaming my wife because my wife. You know, sourced us those tickets, which was, you know, I shouldn't really be talking
gold.
About it on the podcast because if you'd like to get one, like, good luck. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we waited like a year and a half to get those tickets.
Yeah.
So, and it was good. It was good. It deals with what I liked about it. The things I liked about it is it deals with a different set of problems, almost an antithesis kind of problems to Harry Potter.
Mm.
And it's almost, you know, the one great thing about J.K. Rowling's book is how inclusive they are and how they include different types of English people and different things going on.
Mm-hmm.
I know he just made a face because I call J.K. Rowling inclusive.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, I'm not on that bandwagon. Like, I have no opinion on that, nor do I even want to get that
fair
discussion.
Yeah.
I think of her as a writer, okay?
Yeah.
And her political beliefs or whatever her other beliefs are, she can keep or she cannot keep. But please don't drag me into your argument. Not your argument, but your argument with that. But I do find when kids read these books, like, they do offer that inclusivity. They make everybody feel like they can be part of something.
Yeah.
This, it was really funny. And the only hints I will give... We were walking around. There's a Harry Potter shop around the corner, which isn't... Mm. It's so funny. It's not even owned by Warner Brothers, but these people were smart enough to say, we'll make a wizarding shop right here.
Clever.
And it's like, yeah, there's another... I'm taking her to afternoon tea at the Wands Emporium, which cost me a fortune, around the corner. And it's like, smart people. You know what I mean? Like, that's a way to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in the shop, and all of a sudden, I stopped in front of... I'm really into my scarves right now. It's part of me, like, getting in touch with my... Metro feminine side. I wear a scarf all the time now. I'm wearing one right now. And I don't know why. I just love them. It's like having a boa. Anyways, I was looking at a new scarf because I've been talking about, I should change this up every once in a while because this one I wear is getting pretty grotty. And so there was a Death Eater one, like one with the Death Eater mark.
Ooh,
and I was like, actually, it's black and white. Black and white always looks good on me. So yeah, that'll work. That'll work. Ooh, but it's Slytherin. Like, ooh, it's Slytherin. And Catherine was like, Dad, I think you are a Slytherin. And I was like, what? Like, I'm Gryffindor all the way. She's like, no, Slytherins are cunning, ambitious, and I can't remember what the other one is. And I was like, oh, I am those things, yeah. And she's like, yeah, Dad, you're a Slytherin.
She just sorted hatted you.
Exactly. And then you watch the play and you realize why she did that, because my favorite character ends up being a Slytherin. And I was like, oh, okay. And then, okay, the other part I can reveal, because this is all about Ludwig down the road. Then we were looking at Draco Malfoy, and if I had blonde hair... That would have been me. And Becky was just chuckling, like, he's even dressed like you right now. Like, shut up, Becky! I'm not a Slytherin! Maybe I am a Slytherin! So we've decided I'm going to get the scarf in the Slytherin shirt.
Nice.
Just to change
absolutely.
It up a bit. To change it up. Because
I love Tom
cool.
Felton.
He's awesome,
he
right?
is cool.
He is awesome.
Very cool.
He is awesome. So I saw that. I saw The Matrix. And TV-wise, I've been watching Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I want us to do a whole podcast on Teddy.
On Oh, is this the Apple TV?
No, on Teddy, the episode. When we talked about it when we did Atlanta, but I'm telling you, like, this is the most underrated. It's a horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's only 30 minutes,
gotcha.
But I'm telling you, like, it's one of the best horror stories that's been done in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And so I only want to do a podcast so I can drop it on the Fright Fest feed and be like, I told you all about this last year at Fright Fest. You need to watch this because it's on Disney Plus.
I'm down.
And I was saying, it's just one episode, so literally everybody should watch it because the writing is so good. The simple fact that the character that you see in that is actually played by Donald Glover, which nobody knew at the time, not even the actor playing against him knew that at the time, is genius in itself.
Lakeith Stanfield as well is...
But
oh,
it's just so well done. It's what I love, and it's kind of what I'm out there searching for because I'm writing my own TV show. My stuff is nothing like any of this stuff yet. I gotta do a lot more work. But this is what I mean. 30 minutes, and they just managed to do better than a bunch of 90-minute ones that I've seen. I don't know. So, the other cool stuff that I saw were the trailers in front of The Matrix Resurrections. Did you catch any trailers?
None that stick out. What did you see?
There's a new Blumhouse one called, The Black Phone that looked really good.
I mean, we only put trailers in front of films that are coming to the Stag, so...
I see. Ooh, that limits your abilities right there, doesn't it? So... But yeah, that looked good. Maybe that was the only one. There were a couple others, I thought. So, I mean, there's tons of good stuff. So, moving back to talking about The Matrix, the other problem with this movie from a production standpoint is it's sitting among giants right now. Mm. When I walked out of the film theater, I was pleased with watching it, but I put it on my spectrum.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was like a remake, okay? So that's the first thing I would say is, even though it's a continuation story, it felt very much like a reboot remake anyway. And that was part of my qualm with it, being like, I don't think you were original enough. I don't think if you were making a fourth one, wanting to take this in a new franchise direction, boy, is James Cameron going to have a fucking shitstorm when he comes out with Avatar 2 and people think it sucks. But this is the problem. You're continuing on a franchise that's 10 years old that no one's seen anything for. It worked for Bad Boys, sure, because Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are always going to have that comedic talent. You could probably make a Fast and Furious 15, 100 years from now, and people would be like, all right, I like cars. Mm. You know what I mean? But like, this just didn't work for me, because I'm like, you're taking the 90s and putting it in 2020. Yeah. It doesn't work. And the other problem is, like, it's better than Bill and Ted's Bogus, whatever the third one was. So that was the low point for me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, right now, what's the mega hit in the theaters is Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it is not Spider-Man 3, even, and it should be. That's the problem, is it should be. It's not Doom.
Yeah.
It's not, it just didn't have all those things.
I think that's the kind of the true fan in you and your expectations, I think.
I don't agree. No. I don't. Part of it comes down to, you know, talk about some of the minor acting performances and the complete lack of screen time some of those people have.
Mm.
You had Priyanka Chopra on here. Hailed as the most beautiful woman in the world. Now, she's married, so that's not fair. But, you know what I mean? Most beautiful woman in the world. And she got, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, come on. You could have put her character in the entire film and people would have loved that.
Mm.
She is glorious on stage. That's the whole point of putting her in the film.
Mm.
And not just because she's beautiful, because she's also a really good actress.
Yeah, the fact that she was playing like an older Seti, like, I was expecting it, and that was it. There was nothing more to it. It's just, she's a grown-up version.
That's exactly
it.
So aside from Trinity and Neo, and going really in-depth into what they're going through, introducing a new architect... Which is fine, Neil Patrick Harris. And that's what I mean. I'm not just a fanboy. I'm someone who loved the structure of this. This is, you know, go back to the podcast about The Matrix, which I'll put in the comments. Like, I love that film. Like, that film made me want to be a filmmaker, even though I didn't know it at the time.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it just... And then the other thing that I didn't like about it was the way it derides its own self. And thinking it's funny doing that.
Yeah.
That whole video game aspect to it.
Yeah.
And the whole guy sitting around a room talking about what they think is cliche was bullshit. Like, it was complete bullshit.
Yeah.
And I was pissed that they put it in there. I'm like, what are you guys trying to talk about here?
Right.
Are you trying to say it's cool or it's not cool, or it's cliche or it's not cliche?
Yeah.
All it is you basically dumping on millennials.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And it's like... That's because you had Lana Wachowski on the driver's seat on this. And she's not... I don't think she's a millennial.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, I think that... And it connects to your earlier point as well, I think, which is it does feel a little bit out of its time.
And what happened was Lana Wachowski was willing to go forward with this when no one else was.
Mm.
That's why her sister's not there.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a big problem for everyone else because they didn't want to come back. It's why... I don't know what Larry Fishburne said to this. Lawrence Fishburne. Like, I don't know if he said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's ridiculous. Mm, mm. But you didn't have enough people coming back. And then it was like you had a few coming back to continue on. My most detested character was Jada Pinkett Smith.
Okay. Yeah. That was a little weird for me as well.
It was just stupid. Yeah, like, it was like, wait, what? Like, yeah. And her character is so ill-developed for all the shit that's happened in apparently 60 years that's happened. And that was my problem. It was this big rush job, but it was apparent that on set, free reign was given again. And this was done before, and we had a disaster to Lana Wachowski saying, you set your vision out. We will back you 100%. It's probably the only reason she was willing to come back. That's the mistake. Mm. Because you're not in... Lana Wachowski was a great, great filmmaker. No offense, Lana. In 1999. And she's made a couple things since then that were pretty good. Yep. But she blew it off the roof in 1999.
Yep.
Not in 2020.
Yep.
You need a producer. You need someone on top saying, this has to have more of this. And I don't know. Maybe, you know, Lana, if you're listening, put it in the comments if it was just the opposite way around. If it was production that took this and said, nah, we got to try this and we got to try this. And they just were dumb with their suggestions. But clearly, people were out of touch.
Yeah.
It does not feel like a film for anybody under the age of 30.
Yeah, that's
right. And that's the worst part is you want a film like Matrix Resurrections because it's a reboot as well, right? To be that you can get that 15-year-old kid in there the same way you got him in for The Matrix and say, dude, this franchise rocks.
Yeah.
Not one 15-year-old kid I know would sit through 10 minutes of that movie. Just because they'd find it boring. They'd say, what's this about? And who cares about any of this stuff? And why is this? The only reason you have any interest in watching what goes on in the film is because you're a fan. So that's all the shit stuff out of the way. That was my qualms with the film.
I don't disagree with anything you said. 100%. I think the fact that I am an over 30-year-old, you know, who remembers this time very nostalgically, and I think I'm in the wheelhouse.
That's right. And the reason I say all those things, and I mean, I spent, a good 10 minutes there. That's the fanboy, because I wanted this film to be amazing. And that's why you're completely right, Ed, because you said I came in with, you know, you came in with lower expectations, and it definitely, you know, filled the bill. That was it was an adequate film, and it was well worth the watch, you know, especially the big screen. So it's another thing that's always hard for me to kind of shit on a film slightly, because I still like the film, guys. Mm. But I tell you, don't wait till this gets on, you know, home viewing. See it.
Unless you have like a killer TV and sound system.
How are you going to have one like that big though? You need the big screen. You need
it,
like...
Visually, it's very cool.
It's the funny thing that happens. As I said, a couple years back, I decided because I was a producer that I would go to the theater once a week, no matter what. And I rarely miss that. Just to get the experience. That's how I've developed in 3 years. Mm. I can tell you so often now that like, trust me, it's so much better on the big screen. Mm. And it just is. Mm. And so that's what I mean. Like, do you need an IMAX for this one? I don't think it was done on IMAX. So I don't think you can. But, you know, the big shots and things like that look even cherrier.
Mm. Yeah, and the effects, like the, you know, the kung fu moves and the shooting and everything.
And that's where, like, I have to kind of throw it over to you. Because from my perspective, the only other, you know, the next thing I'm going to say, which I told you I got it all the way, right? But the other thing was, like, the lack of update on the visual effects and changing in style of the film from 1999. Bullet Time was revolutionary.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it changed everything about how filming was done. Mm. I did not catch one thing in this film that I thought was revolutionary.
No, definitely.
And that's the problem I have. Mm. I'm like, but you guys are supposed to be, you lady, are supposed to be the pioneer of this. Mm. You are the person that's supposed to take it to the next level.
And then it makes fun of itself.
And instead you sat back on your laurels and took the paycheck. And I'm like, but that's the whole point. Like, you can't make a movie about not taking the paycheck and pushing boundaries and then take the paycheck and not push the boundaries. Like, come on, guys. Like, that's what The Matrix was so cool about. You're like, you know, check it out with the music as well, because that was, oh man, I have so many things. It's the fanboy ranting. But yeah, like the soundtrack to The Matrix was another element that was like, oh my god, soundtrack for this actually redoes the Rage Against the Machine song at the end, which I, you know, with a female vocalist, and I was like, really, that's what I get? Like, it fit the message of the story, which was all about making sure Trinity got back to being, you know, it almost went to Ghostbusters, but didn't go that far.
Yeah.
And so I was happy because it stopped right before it became Ghostbusters, you know, like.
Yeah.
Because I was really afraid she was going to be the one. And it was going to be like, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? Like,
she was always.
It's not about one being the one. It's about both being. Oh, like equality, mate. Equality.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with any of that. The trouble is, and again, this is why, for me, my expectations being lowered really helped in my enjoyment of the film. was because nothing really hits an 8 even. Apart from maybe Keanu and Carrie Ann. In terms of, like you say, just being blown away, whether it's incredible effects or whether it's the use of philosophy and, like, you know, an action film with meaning and, you know.
It comes close with Neil Patrick Harris. I thought he was the only other character that really, to me, as far as getting the ethos, because the original Architect, I can't even remember the original Architect because I always remember the MTV Awards parody when Will Ferrell was like, means the coming of all existence, the ongoing of all existence. And he deliberately makes no sense because when the Architect spoke in the second Matrix, you were like, what?
It became a meme.
You're like, you were like taking notes. You're like, I need to reference this. I need to Google. And this is before Google. So you're like, I need to figure out what this all means.
I think in the sequels, I think they tried to be too clever for their own good.
Definitely.
And I think this one also goes a little bit in that direction, particularly with like, the video game aspects, and it just felt like someone who didn't really grow up with that.
Thank you. No, because the thing is, like, the other thing, a lot of it you can tell is disappointment, I guess, because I could have just seen, because again, this is what happens. One of the things I've been prepped for, you know, because I'm trying to get an agent and all this stuff, is what films would you like to make? What TV shows would you make? And I was talking to Ed about this last week, like, Lovecraft Country is a really good example of that. Something I said, God, I wish I made that. Mm. You know what I mean? I could write like that, I'm sure, and I wish I would have, like, put that concept together. You know, when it comes to The Matrix, this is all I'm doing, and this is the whole point of having two filmmakers on there, is like, I just would have pared back the detail. Like, they just go into depth like they did on the second and the third one. And it's like, don't.
Yeah.
No one cares. No one's listening. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because no one's read Smalcrum. You know, no one's done this. Yes, you have fans that have. And you made everyone on cast read this. Mm. But you remember, this is supposed to be for everyone.
The balance in the first Matrix is so on point. It's so perfect.
Well, it invites you into the alternative because even if you're not alternative, you can kind of see the style and you can definitely understand the story. What you don't want to do is make people feel stupid. And that's what this one did. And it laughs at them while they're doing that. And being like, ha, 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 you think this is cool.
And like you say, it kind of laughs at young people as well.
Right, about all these video games are always so trite and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it was like, come on, man. Like,
have you
played? And this is coming from a production house that made two video games. One which did decently, the other which did pretty poorly.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying is like,
I think, you know, and again, because I'm in the wheelhouse of this film, I although I grew up with video games, I'm not a gamer, right? I don't connect with, like, younger generations in that sense.
Well, it is just...
And so I found some of that stuff funny, you know, but... Oh, I didn't tell you as well. I was the only person in the cinema. It was a private screening for me. At one point, I needed to get up to go to the bathroom, and I thought about going to ask them to pause
it. You just pause it for a second. No, I mean, that's the giants, right? It's like everybody's at Spider-Man 3. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to this. If you're going to spend $15 on a film, that's the problem. It's up against a lot of good. And Ghostbusters was farther up the spectrum than this for me. I said Ghostbusters was slightly better than The Matrix. It was like, it's in between The Matrix and Spider-Man 3. But that's what I mean. Like, you can go back to an old franchise. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what I did like about the film.
Yes, please, let's.
We talked about clever. The film is clever. Wachowski-type clever. So as much as I'm like, you guys were too clever on this one, I still love the concept.
Yeah.
I love the idea that this was, that they've imprisoned him again, and that the way they've done it is by making him think he's just created this all in his head. Mm-hmm. We live in a world of gaslighting, and this was really, you know, watch this and then watch Don't Look Up, and you have got the zeitgeist of how people feel post-COVID right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was beautiful that way.
There was definitely a nugget in there, like a golden nugget. Yeah,
perfect one. And then all the different parts to that I really like. The fact that he doesn't look like he really is. They've managed to change his residual self-image, but he sees himself as the person he's always been. Mm-hmm. Other people see him differently. And Tiffany, who is Trinity, you know, that's a stroke of genius to me.
Okay.
And that's what disappoints me, because I was like, guys, if you would have just maybe... The other problem, one of the many problems, you know, was how long this was. People checked their watch about 20 times in this film. Like, cut 45 minutes out of it, make it a 2-hour film, and then, you know...
But we're talking about the things we liked.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. In 2 hours, there were 2 hours of great content there. So, you know, you go to IO. I love the concept of that. Mm. The idea of them, because they pick off, that's the stuff that I would have just run with, the picking off where you left off, because the concept of machines and humans fighting against other machines was a brilliant idea. Yeah. I mean, it's been done in The Terminator. I always laugh because people always think The Matrix is so original. I'm like, it's just a continuation of The Terminator. Yeah. It really is just someone who saw T2 and said, wait a second, we could make that even further. Yeah. I mean, that's all it is, guys. Like, and so that's what I mean. Like, they went on that route, and I think there is more there. Like, there is more they could play. Maybe if they make other sequels. I don't know if this one's going to merit a fifth or sixth one, but if they went to the next one, it would be like, how is this war going to play out? Like, that would be cool to see. But that's the thing. You had all
box office-wise, definitely not.
No, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just that's the thing. There were some great performances from some of the, you know, it had... I feel horrible for this girl because she's always in
Jessica
stuff.
Henwick.
That's it. Because I love her performance.
She's great.
She's amazing. She's great. It's on point.
She's so good.
Like, just like one of the best characters, right? Yeah. However, she's always a shadow character. Mm. Like everything I see her in, she always is secondary to somebody main.
Yeah.
And she does that again in this one, where she's not as fleshed out as everyone else.
Yeah.
But that was the same way she was in not Daredevil, but in Iron Fist.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the best thing in Iron Fist. Do you know what I mean?
And she's
that's why she continued on.
She's great in this. Like, I could have watched a movie about her.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that was and I think that really is being considered the side project with the you know, the bringing back. And you know, it was a stupid role that he played, but I would love to see a side project on the Merovingian. You know what I mean? I just thought. First, his inclusion was amazing.
Really? I kind of hated it.
I love that character. Really? One of my favorite Matrix 100%. Characters. And I hated the fact that he never appeared again.
Me, 100%.
That's probably why they brought it back. You know what I mean? Because people cried out and be like, why did you get rid of this awesome character? He was so cool.
Yeah, but he was so awesome.
And he was horrible in this. Yeah. Right? He's just all scrambling down. He's yelling. Oh. And he does the French thing. So that was...
Yeah, which kind of got a chuckle out of
like wiping your ass with silk.
But that guy, like, again, yes, I would have watched a whole movie about him.
Yeah, 100%. And then they didn't bring back the, you know, I guess they couldn't bring back the, they were scared to bring back the pasty white ghosts with dreadlocks. Like, I wondered whether that was a racial thing, because all of a sudden they had, like, some other fighters, and you're like, that weren't the people they were fighting.
Do you know, they were, like, pop stars in England. And, like, and they were in a pop band called Bros.
It doesn't surprise me. In America, the whole white dreadlocks thing really didn't get you far after 95. Like, you just couldn't pull it off without somebody being like, why are you wearing dreadlocks?
The other actor that I really enjoyed was Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
Oh, okay. For a minute, I thought you... Because he always picks, like, these, like, did you catch that guy? I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about. No, of course. I mean, that's Dr. Manhattan to me.
Yeah.
And
he's
that,
so good.
That's what sold me on him is when he plays Dr. Manhattan, because I've never... His performance, and I just watched it again a couple weeks ago, his performance as Dr. Manhattan is
pitch perfect.
God, it's just not scary. It's not scary how powerful he is and how not powerful he is.
He portrays that, like, what is scary about...
I mean, what I loved about Watchmen and his thing is the versatility, right? Mm. When you first watch Watchmen, and I'm ruining this for you, so please skip ahead about a minute and a half, otherwise.
If you haven't watched Watchmen, maybe 5 minutes. This is massive spoiler.
Massive spoiler. But at the beginning of, I mean, he has to play something that you're not going to spot as Dr. Manhattan, because everyone's looking for Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
He gets away with it. I don't know how he got away with it, but he was so good at getting away with it. And then the reveal, and you're like, and then he takes over as Dr. Manhattan and is just as good as this omnipotent, powerful character.
And I think that this was maybe the biggest banana skin for me coming in, was the fact that Lawrence Fishburne, Morpheus, so iconic.
And again, you know, didn't you love the explanation for why that is that way? That he's not Morpheus, he's this combo. Which leads me to one of the characters I didn't like. One of the ones, and there were few, there weren't many that I was like, oh, it's crap.
Mm.
I wish they had some had more screen time, but the one I didn't like was Agent Smith.
Yeah, I was a little bit like...
I didn't like the actor. I just didn't think, I'm like, doesn't... I guess they would have asked. It was the other one they asked, and he probably said...
He definitely said, oh, hell no.
No, I'm not coming back to that role again. And it was like...
I think, to be fair, he's getting on in age, and he didn't want to do any fighting.
I don't know. It was just... It's the problem, because you had somebody... Now, it worked with the Oracle. They changed the Oracle into someone different, and the new Oracle wasn't terrible. Like, you missed the old Oracle, but she died. So what are you going to do?
Who was the new Oracle?
I can't remember. She wasn't bad. She just, you know, she always had, she doesn't have as much of a part in the second one as she does.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, gotcha. In the sequels. Yeah.
Yeah. And she has a, they're really good at explaining it because the Wachowskis have always been like, oh no, they got to me. And that's how I changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The only one they couldn't explain was obviously the guy who plays, I think, Link in the first one was a Hispanic dude.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't the same guy. It's a really good actor in the second one, but it's not the same guy. Mm. And I can't remember if there's an explanation for that. It was the Iron Man situation where like he wanted a lot of money. Yeah. We're not going to pay you that. So sorry, buddy. But yeah, I just didn't like the Smith character, or kind of the I didn't understand the Smith character. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Everything else fits. And that's why I would say story-wise, if it's complicated, fine. It's still understandable. Mm. It's not to Matrix 3 where you're just scratching your head like, I don't get what happened here.
Yeah.
You understand what happened.
Yeah.
By the end of the story, you're like, okay, this makes sense to me.
It's fairly satisfying.
Except the Agent Smith thing. Like, he kind of explains it because he says, I want to be free. But you're like, this was the same argument you had in the third one. Yeah. And I thought you died in the third one.
Yeah, it's retreading. I think it's a little bit of, oh, well, we're doing a Matrix. We have to, have Agent Smith in it.
It was because there's always supposed to be the dichotomy between Neo and Agent Smith.
But that story was told.
Done, right? It's Skywalker's saga.
Yeah, but honestly, like, you rewatch the first one and you're like, wow, that's a really satisfying movie. I didn't need 3 sequels. Do you know what I mean? But again,
I only make the funny fanboy face because like, but I wanted.
I know,
three
but
sequels.
That's exactly, and I love, and this is what I really enjoyed about this one was I love the world of the Matrix.
I do,
right?
I do. The like, video games are just as cool.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. That's one of the few video games that I played from start to finish.
Yeah.
Where you get like a little bit more story. On top of, like,
yeah,
with the key master.
When you're in the Eye of Osiris,
and,
right?
Yeah, was it the Logan with Niobe?
Niobe's, Niobe's ship.
I love being in this world. You know, the fashion, you're probably right, you know a lot more about this than I do. There were moments like when one of the girls had like this haircut and I was like, wow, that's dope.
No, I mean, some of it was there. So there's a girl that has those feather tattoos. Like, that's more what I would see nowadays. And I only know this because I need actors and actresses. I need young people. Like, you don't hire 40-year-old actors and actresses normally. Like, you got to go to young people. And so I have to know, like, what do young people look like these days? Young people. I hate having to say that, but it's the truth. Yeah. You know, I'm almost 40 now.
And Jessica Henwick, like, again, I
so cool.
Yeah,
right?
I was totally like, oh, this is cool.
But that's what I meant. So like with her and with a bunch of the others, they're like pushing blue glasses. It was all about blue glasses.
Yeah.
And they pushed in the Matrix, the original one, and it caught on like wildfire. And this one, it was like they were trying to push it.
Right.
I'm not buying blue sunglasses. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's the thing about such an incredible film that The Matrix is that they captured lightning in a bottle.
They did. And unfortunately, I think now, like, and this goes back to like the comments about Niobe, like the film felt old.
Yeah.
When you get to Io and they're talking about, well, we had to do these things because these are the kind of things I have to say to my child now. These are like the adult conversations we have to have. And I totally get that the 40-year-old sitting there is going to understand this is the world we live in now.
But
that was never the premise of The Matrix. The Matrix was young.
Right.
It was fresh. The whole point was that it was something new.
Yeah. And again, they're very aware of it because they kind of do this whole meta self-mocking when they're talking about the video game and... You know, but again, that feels like a bunch of older people, middle-aged people around a table coming up with that
and that's
stuff.
What I mean. And it wasn't all played by that. That was the funniest thing. You have these, like, 20, 25-year-old guys being like, oh, that's blah, blah, blah. I was like, the fuck are you? Like, what do you know?
Were you, like, really freaked out when Christina Ricci showed up?
I barely recognized that's who it was. I didn't recognize her at all.
Okay.
And then I Googled because I was like, I didn't. Someone had told me she was in the film.
Yeah.
And so I thought she'd show up as one of the action characters.
Yeah.
And then she's not. She's like another wasted role.
Yeah. It was weird, dude. I spent the entirety of her time on screen. Is that Christina Ricci? No. Shit, wait, is it? Like, literally, the whole time
she
was on screen?
It's the profile of the original Matrix. Her style, her fashion at the time. This is why so many of us are, like, gaga about her, because she was part of that alternative kind of style, dress, whatever she, you know, she started in the Addams Family as a kid and then moved on to doing more and more stuff like that. And then she did some really great indie stuff like Buffalo 66.
She's amazing.
Buffalo 66 is what it's called? Yeah. Like amazing film.
Like just, Black Snake Moan.
Right.
Oh my God, you know, like, I love
something like
film.
Chloe Sevigny. She was really good at doing the indie stuff and doing it gritty, you know, and doing it really raw. Yeah. And here she shows up in some like throwaway role and I'm like, why would you cast her for
it's
that?
It's the worst. Like
she has 10 seconds she talks and then she's gone again.
Yeah. If it's like, hey, this is my buddy and they're just gonna show up, I kind of get it, but it just seems like such a waste.
It felt like, you remember that scene in Rise of, you know, this is really going back to Rise of Skywalker. This isn't as bad as Rise of Skywalker, guys. Like, I really hated Rise of Skywalker. Rise of Skywalker had that, what was that, cameo though, wasn't it, by who was it? Some guy just shows up and it's like, oh, he's there for 5 seconds and he's gone. And it was like, why wouldn't he be in the film? You're like, it totally takes you out of the film for that 5 seconds because you're like, what is he doing on the Rebel Alliance base? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I also read that Tom Hardy has a little cameo, but in the background.
That's fine.
You know exactly.
Mean? Dude, Lord of the Rings, Led Zeppelin's in the background.
That's
one of my
what I'm
favorite
saying.
Stories from Jason Lee Howden.
If
you know what I mean?
If that's what it is, if it's like, oh, we're buddies, you know, like, yeah,
yeah
throw
they,
them
they
in the background.
They dressed Robert Plant
right?
and Jimmy Page up like goblins 100%. And let them run at people. And I'm
but
like,
don't give me like a close up and like a speech from a fantastic actress. And just confuse me.
You do, because you did this really well with Last Night in Soho. You do the, you know, Diana Rigg, she's got to be important. And then the problem is in this one, Christina Ricci is not important.
Completely.
She's just there for the ride.
So this is I'm afraid this is sounding like very, very negative. I still really,
we're just being
enjoy
critical.
It.
And it's because, unfortunately, that's the type of film it is. It's a film that you'll watch, you'll enjoy, but you will pick apart later on.
Yeah.
Not as badly as you picked apart the second and the third one.
Yeah.
But you will pick this one apart.
Yeah. Yeah, this okay, so I was thinking about this and it may sound like
the
like
Animatrix remains the best sequel.
Okay,
to the
thank
movie.
You. Yes, that's a good point because I'd forgotten about that. So, I was ranking in my head where I would put this one and I hadn't considered the Animatrix, which 100% is the best sequel.
Yeah, so Matrix, Animatrix.
I'd put this one
Matrix
next.
Resurrection.
Yeah.
Matrix Reloaded.
Reloaded.
Matrix sucked.
The
best story I ever heard about that was because it came out when I was in college. And oh, God knows what I got up to in college, right, guys? But this dude came up to my dorm, or my apartment at the time, and he's like, yeah, I just saw this with my best friend. We both decided to take some mushrooms, and he puked all over the front when those things came out. I was like, why would you take mushrooms to see a Matrix movie? Like, that's the worst possible idea
you've
had.
Probably not good. It's going to not be great.
I can just picture like someone when all the machines came out, he goes, bruh! It's just like, yep, that's about how I felt about that film.
I think the martial arts in this were very, very good.
Excellent again. And it brought that back. You know, we lose these things because Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, all these things. And now it's like off to China. Now if the Chinese are doing it, well, we'll let the Chinese do it. Like, no! Like there was a time when we were adopting this fight style, this stuff in American
again,
cinema.
Again, cutting edge shit.
Right? You know? Like it's just good. It's good action for screen. Like I just, you know,
and
don't...
The effects that are in this, which none of them push any boundaries or anything like that, but it does look fucking cool. And I remember, do you remember when there's like two helicopters chasing
them? Oh my God, there's so many cool moments like that.
And you get that wobble from the impact.
I just love that.
In the original. And they kind of replicate this, but, you know, bring it up.
But I like the new stuff as well. Like, I loved the machine world. Like, I just, that's the only thing, like, more time. Because, like, every time they got there, it was so cool. Yeah. Especially when you meet, like, if I'm going to understand correctly, is the bird, is that Priyanka Chopra? Like, is that her real self?
That's kind of what I thought.
I think so, right?
But it doesn't make sense to me because she was a program like Smith, which I believe they don't have physical forms.
No, I mean, that was, okay, so.
Phone's ringing.
Hello. We're going to let it ring for a minute. I might edit it out or we might just let it go.
Just let it go. Let it go, like Elsa in Frozen.
Let it go.
Let it go.
Cold doesn't bother. That's such a lie, people. The cold is shit. I spent 2 weeks in my house with no heat. Don't ever say the cold doesn't bother.
One thing
you.
That I wanted to say to you when we were talking about...
He's poking
I'm poking you, so this is important.
Me. I'm shutting up.
No, but you and I'm going to keep bugging you. You need to watch Arcane. That's all I'm going to say.
It's on my list.
Good.
My list.
Just do it. Please.
It's on my list.
But Yeah, and again, there were some confusing things like that. I mean, again, the Merovingian, they kind of sort of explain it in a very throwaway line.
How did they explain it? I think I missed all that.
They're like, he was purged because of you, they destroyed the last Matrix and he was purged.
Right, they explain that. So that's a big part of the story, which I thought was fair enough because it's a reboot. So they're saying, we got rid of the old Matrix, the 1999.
Yeah.
We've rebuilt this now.
Yeah.
And it's controlled by this new architect, which, again, strong character story-wise. Like, he explains himself well and gets Sinister exactly when he needs to. So Neil Patrick Harris, also a very decent performance.
He is good. There were a couple of moments where I was like, do I like you? And then he kind of brought me back because he is great. He's great as a villain. But yeah, there were like loose ends that felt like they had to be in there because maybe the fans wanted them, or it's like, oh, well, this is a Matrix film. It's got to have this thing in it. But then it wasn't taken any further than just...
No, because, like, again, so there's the Purge, and you were explaining, and I cut you off, like, listening skills.
that lasted 30
all
minutes.
Of 10 seconds. I'll have to watch the video again. It's only 30 minutes. Be my mantra. You know, like, what was the explanation given for how they escaped the Purge and end up in the new one?
That's what I didn't get.
Oh, me neither. Yeah. Like, yeah, no. So, I heard all about the Purge, because, again, you can tell I liked her character. Mm. Like, she explains that her parents are dead because... You know, they purged and at the end, you know what I mean? Once they're told what's really going on. The other thing that's not really explained well to me, if I'm honest, and I hate this part of it, because it's the same reason I hated that part in the original Matrix. Mm. And I talked about it in the podcast. Mm. The one bit of the original Matrix that I was like, dumb, is Trinity kisses him and life goes back to normal. Okay, never explained as to why in God's name that worked, but... Okay, fine. I was like, I'll let it go for the sake of that. It's the last 10 minutes of the show. And I love the rest of this. Yeah. And I guess it was the 90s where we still could have the guy get the girl and we're all happy.
And there was a lot of stuff because they did correct a lot of things. But there were a lot of things that they also didn't correct.
They didn't correct the... So when we get the two of them together, it's like lightning fire. And it's like, well, why?
And yeah, and like, why
is it when
Neo,
the two of them touch?
And why does Neo have powers outside of the Matrix? Like... You know, like, that was a really big thing.
When did
for me.
He have powers outside the...
So when he goes to the city...
The
Machine City. He starts, like...
It's been that long since I've watched the third one. He did have powers outside.
Yeah, and you're like, what?
Well, he certainly didn't have them this time.
No, right. And it's never... and it's never brought up.
Sorry, Room of Nerds, guys. Room of Nerds. These are the kind of things where, like, wait. Yeah, that doesn't... No, I mean, it was that whole explanation, the whole rebuilding of the bodies. Like, how did you do that?
Right, exactly.
We have ways we can do that have been explained in science fiction. Like, just pick one of them, you know? Like, we took the single cell that we found on his... After we decimated him into a single brain cell, we took that brain cell and made another Neo. Like, instead, they're just like, we just rebuilt them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we just fixed you, you know?
He's even doing the right face for it. It was the face that they had. It was like, yeah, I was just done. You're like, done how? You've explained everything else in this film, and you're not going to tell me how you rebuilt these two people?
And I'll be honest, I was also, like... This, I thought, okay, so Trinity's the one. Is that what you're going to do here?
Oh, man, it was that close. I would have really called Ghostbusters, and I would have been like, no, it does not solve the problem.
Yeah, a part of me was like, oh, okay. But then, one thing that I kind of liked, which was it just me, but the other game that he's been working on is called Binary. And I liked... The idea of you know, two...
I'm becoming more comfortable with Binary. I'm a very binary person, so you know what I mean? I'm not non-binary. I'm not somebody who claims to be both, but I am someone who... And people get surprised by this, I think, sometimes, because I went through a period where I was really macho, but now I'm not. Like, I'm very feminine now, and that's what I mean. Like, I don't have a problem with it. I've always loved being slightly androgynous, you know what I mean? That's just the way I am.
Yeah.
But it's funny that society is catching up to that now and understanding that, like, that's just a way, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean that anybody wants to be anything. It's just some people are like that.
Do you think that by calling out some of the criticisms that the Matrix films got, that is adding anything to the conversation?
Because a really good question, because that's exactly my point when I was like, were they all sitting around in a discussion? Yeah, yeah. Like, don't ever do that in a film, dude. Yeah, yeah. It's the same reason I'm always taught in my day job, because I have to do a lot of sales and a lot of stuff like that. Don't self-deprecate. Like, it doesn't really endear you to people to
I don't know. I'm a very self-deprecating person.
Well, you know.
And I think it can do, but not if it comes off smug.
I was about to say, don't take this the wrong way, but that's your misinterpretation of thinking that people like that you self-deprecate. Mm. People like you, Ed. Mm. They like who you are. Mm. You self-deprecate because you think it makes you like you more. It doesn't. Like, at least, you know, when they do studies on all this crap, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't endear to anybody. And it clearly didn't work in the film here. I guess going back to that, you know what I mean? Like, every time those guys were sitting around the room, because that's really when that happens, right? The other thing was... Oh,
the cat video thing was so weird.
Oh my god.
That felt like a very, like, you stupid millennials. Yeah. That's what that felt like.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, shitting on, and that's what I mean, like, I said the same thing when I was like, what can you do in 50? Like, I said the opposite, I'm sorry. No, I did say the opposite, because TikTok, it's just enforcing that again, saying, like, you guys are idiots, all you can do is, you know, podcast, you know, this, and that on TikTok. It's like, no, 15 seconds of film is 15 seconds of film. You can make something glorious if you figured it out.
There's an art to it.
People get, you know, boners from photographs, mate, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, National Geographic, like, come on now. Like, it's not impossible, and when you demean the art that way, it's like, well, okay.
Yeah,
why, you know, we live in a culture where we're bombarded with information. Naturally, our younger generations want smaller bites of it so they can deal with their own sanity.
And, you know, it's...
They even talk about that, being like, do you remember how loud it was when you were in The Matrix?
Yeah, yeah.
Those were the points where they were really making good points.
See, and that's perhaps the most frustrating thing about this film, is that there are a lot of good moments ideas.
That's part of that fan fiction started looking... I mean, fan fiction for me, it was like you almost had a deeper story there about meta worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have worked. When I read those, I think I told you a couple weeks ago, I was going through Polygon... And Polygon was talking about video games. And I thought they had ruined The Matrix for me. I thought they had told me Matrix Resurrection was just going to reveal that everything was just a big video game. Not even the machine world, but it was just all encapsulated.
Yeah.
I think they could have gone that way in a meta level. Because, like, you know, it would have been like Inception where you have, you know, different layers of everything. It looked like it was there. And, like, they could have punched on that a little bit. And again, instead...
the nuggets are there. But they just never really hit the right tone.
But I want to hit up a particular character that I just have to do a shout out to, because she looked like my grandma when my grandma was young.
Okay.
Even had my grandma's glasses, and I didn't get to see her enough. That girl that's at the coffee table, and that later becomes someone important to him that's supposed to be watching Neo, and is involved in all this, that has like the thick glasses. She like points to him twice. She's only in the film for like 10 seconds, but there was this really... she's a really cool character.
Wait, isn't that Priyanka Chopra?
No, right? Oh, I'm going to go back and watch.
We're talking about the same...
The one that...
Yeah, with the glasses, who, like, points at him and stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah, because that later, Priyanka Chopra is like, oh, I was watching
She
you.
Was in disguise then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, now I feel better about the whole thing. Thanks, Ed.
That's all right.
I would like to see more of that actor then, I guess. I would have said.
Because
I just thought she would look cool. She looked like my grandma. Grandma Olga. Olga was awesome that way. Anyways, thank you. See, sometimes we solve some of the problems.
No, and this is also the thing about like watching something in the theater. Like I say, I stepped out.
But that was to use the bathroom. I got told that at 2:35. That's why because I watched the 8:40 showing of this. I always go to the late showing on a Sunday because my wife usually just watches what she wants. She doesn't mind that I'm not there. You know, I'm a good husband. I try to be around. You know what I mean? And so it was getting to like 11. I told her I'd be back by like 11:30, and it was like 11:15.
I went to 8 o'clock.
It'll be like midnight. Yeah, you know, when I get back,
10 when it finished.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? And it was just by that point she's explaining. I was like, let's wrap it up. How many more battles are we gonna have? That was the other thing I didn't quite understand. Maybe you can explain that. Swarming.
Yeah, I thought there was like a video game reference, bots swarming.
The bots part, yeah. If you played games like Quake or Unreal Tournament, those were the original games that had bots. So when Unreal Tournament's the best example. Mm. Unreal Tournament was designed to be played online with other people.
Yeah.
You know, when you were learning to play the game first, you would create bots. Yeah, and bots would go around and shoot at you as opposed to being online.
Right.
And so they've, you know, gone on and on.
They used the phrase bots a couple of times.
Bots are, you know, just like they would be in a video game, are like these dummy figures. And the way that bots are treated now is that the agents can just take anybody they want.
Right.
And they don't have to morph into them. They just remain that person.
Yeah, I mean, was it attempting to add a layer of, like, you know, something scary about, you know, this Matrix as opposed to the last Matrix?
I think so, right? So the idea is that instead of there just being one agent that comes after you, the entire room can swarm and they're all agents coming after you. I guess. Like,
but yeah, again, 6, if I had to grade it, you know, in terms of like...
And understandability was like a 4. It was like, how do they do this? Yeah. Why do they do this? And why don't they go... You know, the old way, they used to be able to chase you and kill you. Like, what was wrong with that?
Yeah.
And that's all I mean. Like, then you have the introduction of you know, Morpheus's character through this... I mean, that was...
The node.
Yeah, a modal. Which makes sense. That's a software... Yeah, okay. But again, we had to spend so much time explaining. It was like, maybe we should have figured out a simpler way to introduce this guy.
Yeah. Or, like, just put it out and then don't worry about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I think that...
You get back to the architect where...
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the original Matrix, right? Like, he's selling, like, programs or something on, like, mini discs.
He's a hacker. Yeah. So he's selling like, illegal...
Right. But, you know, we didn't need to know exactly what he was doing.
No.
Know?
It's a really good point, because that was back in the days when I was not a hacker but knew a lot about hacking. And so people would come to me and say, so what is he doing there? And
right.
I'm like, define
how. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, like he's selling something. Yeah. Like, is it child porn? Like, how would I know? Like, I love how you just asked me that. Yes, because that's what hackers deal in, is child porn. You know, like, sickos.
The whole rabbit tattoo on Bugs.
Ah, there was a lot of that, though. There was a lot of, like, remember when we did this in the first one? Remember when we did this in the second one? I could have done away with, again, cutting 45 minutes. Cut all that shit. I saw those movies. I would not be at The Matrix Resurrection had I not watched all those films incessantly.
Is he not going to follow you through the bright light, you know, without showing him the tattoo?
That's the other point. I mean, there wasn't necessarily all the magic about, you know, the original one. There's magic there. Because people forget, it is very Alice in Wonderland, but there's a clear reference the entire way through for all of that. But he goes into the place, and you're still not quite sure what's going on. I love that, because I never saw The Matrix originally in the theaters. Bought it on VHS. I remember I took it home. I said, everybody's watched this film. I might as well give it a watch.
I watched it, but I came in late. So I came in at the point where he's getting literally where his mouth got, like, sealed up.
And you're like...
And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
But no, that was the beauty of the first act. Because that's all the first act of The Matrix, right? So the first act is you and Neo's, Thomas Anderson's world. Yeah. And what I loved about it is I had heard all the hype about The Matrix. And I was like then, like I am now, that I was like, no, I'm not going to fucking like it then. Everybody's hyping this up to be great. I bet you think it's shit. I bet you think it's shit. And then I watched it and I'm like, why is everyone hyping this film up? Like, what's going on here? Mm. And I honestly had no clue what the reveal was going to be. Mm. And then when it comes, you're like, that's genius. Mm. And unfortunately, like, it is lightning in a bottle. You're never going to replicate that again. You could have tried to do something different, though. That's all I'm saying is, like, that's why it's unsatisfying, because you're going back to those memories. Yeah. You're going back to, do you remember when you did this? Do you remember? I just touched him in the arm again. I always feel bad.
No, it's okay. I'm good now.
Five times in the arm. You know, but he keeps going back and, like, you remember this? I do remember all this. This is back when I was, like, 13 years old when this came out. Can we stop referencing that?
But
like,
the danger then becomes...
No one will go watch the movie because no one has. There's no anchor.
Last Jedi, the second of the sequels.
Yeah, the one that I liked. I didn't like it originally, and then I liked. Like, I liked that you sat down with me. We had a discussion about the messaging. In The Last Jedi, and I was like, no, I agree with
that.
And
in trying to do something different, right?
Which is, to be fair, which Disney and Star Wars have embraced that to the slightest effect with their newer stuff. They are no longer fixated on the Skywalker saga.
Yes.
So, which is good. You know, I just think, give someone else a chance. You know what I mean?
But
Boba Fett 2 is supposed to be really good, by the way. Your brother dropped.
Yes. My brother, who is like our sounding board
for Star Wars stuff.
I've heard. But I've yet to, like... And there have been a couple of times where I'd be like, oh, I could watch that. And then I watch Starship Troopers, for example. You know what I mean?
Like, no, it's interesting. It's like the other thing I watched this week, you know, that I didn't mention because I only watched the first half of it, the last episode of Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I'm not... Hawkeye's not that interesting. Mm. Like, as a Marvel goes, it's middling. Slightly, it's like below Captain and Winter Soldier to me because I'm not as interested in it. Yeah. But my daughter absolutely yeah. loves it, right?
They're she very just, smart.
She loves having smart. That female lead. Yeah. I knew she would. Like, yeah. This is why you need to hire me.
Young people, right?
Right? Young and so people. I watched half of it with her. It had, you know, the return of my I mean, Florence Pugh, please yes. come be in one of my films.
Isn't she great?
I will give you a cool accent that you can do. I promise. What I was having to tell, because my daughter, she's my little producer. That's the other thing that's always so funny about ever getting to watch stuff. Because she really does. She's my best friend when it comes to movies other than you, Ed.
Oh, that's right. So, that's right, Catherine.
And so, like, she sits there, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's Florence Pugh. She's like, Daddy, do you want her in one of your films? I'm like, yeah, I definitely want her in one of my films. She's like, amazing. Do you know any of her friends yet? Because that's what you normally do when you want them in your films. And I'm like, no. I think I know one person that knows her, so I need to drop them an email, don't I? She's like, yeah, Daddy, that's how you got that last person. And I was like, I haven't gotten anyone yet, Catherine. She's like, yeah, but they like you now. And I'm like, okay, yeah, well, they've talked to me before. So, you know what I mean? Like, she's just this cute little mini producer over here being like, so what's... And that's I was like, and the funny thing with Florence Pugh, Catherine, this is just because we were having this conversation, this led to this. I'm like, the funny thing about Florence Pugh is I don't know what she really sounds like. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? He's like, well, my two favorite films that she's in, she plays an American in the horror film that I love that she's in. Mm-hmm. And then she plays this, she has this awful Russian accent, but it works because yeah. it's so awful. It works
so well. You need to watch the wrestling movie.
I will. And I have seen her. I just don't remember it. She's in this really good... It was like... I wouldn't say it's really good. I felt almost dirty watching it, but not because it had also my other favorite English actress, the girl from The New Mutants that I told you I really like. Maddie Wilson? No.
From Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love how I referenced New Mutants. Yes, and also one of the best characters in Game of Thrones. So they're in an English school. Like a
drama.
Yeah, and I fell asleep to it because it is a good movie. But yeah. it was a movie. Yeah. MUBI, which means if I'm not in the mood for it, I'm going to be out of this in 10 minutes. And that's how it was for that one. And I guess I should go on to that one because then she's English in that one. I'll find out what she sounds like. But I told her, I was like, I don't know what she sounds like as an English girl.
She's so good in the wrestling one to the point where I watched the wrestling one. I fell in love with Florence Pugh mostly through Midsommar. And then I realized, wait, she played the main character in the wrestling movie as well. Holy shit. She's very, very chameleonic.
Very chameleonic, very talented. And definitely, Florence, if you ever listen to our podcast or anyone knows Florence out there, get her to talk to us. Because I have a couple of things that I think she'd be really great with. Mm. But do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's what I mean. Like, Hawkeye works because you put elements like that in there. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, all right, this is watchable.
And again, you're bringing in a young audience.
But that's a really good contrast for this. So that's maybe the litmus test with a parent. Like, yes, you made a movie for me, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And so me is thanking you.
Yeah.
The producer that's on the show, so consider it like an alter ego, you know, mouth, doesn't know why you did that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you've just... taken out a big portion of the box office you need for this, and it's obvious that's how it works. Spider-Man goes crazy because the kids love Spider-Man.
It is a tough release schedule. I honestly, like, I think the pandemic has...
So I'm so excited for Avatar 2 because I just want that to crash and burn like the most meteoric piece of crap in the sky.
But it's interesting, man. Like, you know, again, working at the cinema and stuff, it just, you can tell there aren't that many movies being let out, you know. People are still in the grips of...
We talked about, you know, Last Night in Soho, and then what was it? Doctor Sleep was the one we were like, films like that just aren't going to get made right now. Not right now.
Yeah.
Blumhouse will fund what he can, but he doesn't make that type of horror movie. Right. He makes a slightly, sometimes better, sometimes worse, like a different type of horror movie than that.
Yeah, those are kind of big gambles, right? Like a Stephen King... follow up to that deserves a studio's attention.
It's interesting though. I think it's a similar type of gamble than you have with this one though, because you have a niche audience.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
True.
Matrix as a movie everyone liked, but the sequels no. So your fan base deteriorated. And so those are the people that are gonna come back for Resurrections, maybe a couple of the old people that loved you know, the original as well, say, all right, well, I like the first one, so maybe this will be as good as the first one. I think those are the people that are going to walk out of the film being like, nope, like, this was not The Matrix.
Yeah, I think, again, there's that you really have to temper your expectations for this film, I think.
And I think once you do, and you're like, I'm going to sit down for it, you know what I mean? So, again, at the end of this, like, you've already gone and watched the film, that's why you're listening to this, but... It's where I start getting to the point where maybe you would be all right with this on your TV, because it's the kind of thing that, like, you might be upset if you dropped 15 quid for it and it's the only thing you saw
contrast,
in the last 3
right?
months because you don't go to the cinema every day like me or every week like me.
Yeah.
Could you watch this on your TV even just as satisfied? I think, yeah. Sadly, yeah. I think, yeah.
You would miss out on a lot of the great spectacle that is an action film on
that is designed to be big, but you would be able to pause it halfway through and get some lunch and then come back to it. Yeah. And that might actually be a better way to watch it. We'll find out because I'll obviously have this one on UHD.
Yeah.
And we'll find out if taking a midway break through it. Cause man, I'm not normally the tapper. I am the editor. Like my wife has even found this out about me cause I do it with everything. And she's like, what do you mean you're the editor? I'm like, well, I never have enough time to actually edit because editing itself takes way too much time for me. I always have to hire out other guys for it, very talented people for that. However, I love editing. Like, I love making something more concise, more powerful by chopping things out of it. And so I was doing it for a couple shows that Becky and I were watching. Oh, she's got me into another one. Okay. We're all talking about what I want to watch this week. I am watching something else this week that I'm really enjoying. It's a Netflix show.
Okay.
Not in my wheelhouse at all. It's in Becky's and her parents. So it's a crime thing. It's on Harley... just realized you won't have a clue sounds what I'm talking Swedish. About. No, it's not. It's English.
Okay.
It's an English crime writer that they've made his books into films. And this one has... This is a 6-part limited series with Eddie Izzard and a couple other characters. Mm. It's a crime mystery that takes place in two, like, fake English towns.
Okay.
I think it's like Stay Close
or something like that. Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
And it is by Harley or Harlan or something like that. His name is a weird H name. Yeah, Harlan, I think it is. Harlan something. It's good. Like, and you can tell for me because I don't do the crime drama thing. Like,
Is it period or like modern day?
It's modern day. It's modern day. And it's interesting because it's modern day and fictional English cities. And I like that because it gives you a bit more freedom with what you can do. Because it's one of the faults. God, I'm just that person, aren't I? Such, I'm becoming a critic. But it's one of those things that, like, people...
You realize there's 112 episodes
in right? Podcast. Right?
We really hit our stride in 112.
112.
When we realized we were just critics.
But no, like all this stuff you watched in England, like, last night in Soho, fine, that's supposed to be in Soho, but, like, you don't... England's a cool place, like, but you don't have to have it in a town. Like, make up the town. You know, I'm doing that for that horror one I'm writing about, Vampires and Werewolves, that was originally going to be in Kentucky. I said, why am I going to put it in Kentucky? I'll put it around the corner. Because it's easy. It's like, exactly. Because you could be a no-name town in Surrey. And, like, I guess it's...
That's one of the things that I like in Hot Fuzz, for example.
Right. So that's one of the best things Edgar Wright did with that, right? Like, it's just create a fictional place and have fun with it. And that's why it just gives you more freedom. You know what I mean? You still have the setting. You still can film things. You know, I think part of this is filmed in Blackpool and part of it's filmed, you know, in Brighton. But you know what I mean? It just, it works. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very good show. Good mystery. You know, slightly hokey. They're all English crime dramas are slightly hokey, only because what I love about them is, like, the whole point is that people like to watch these, like, to be, like, really clever, right? They like to think that they know the ending before it happens.
I mean, you're talking about me, so
exactly.
Yes.
I'm talking about a lot of people, so in England, but not all English people, right? But it's like spoon feeds you the whole way, you know. It's it's a bit like Americans in the Da Vinci Code. Like,
yeah.
People that watched Da Vinci Code in America were like, "Oh my god, it was so awesome!" You're like, "That was the."
I just watched a really funny, what's his name? Not John Stewart. The English guy who died.
I love that. Not John Stewart. What, John Olivier?
John Oliver. Thank you. John Olivier. Like, we both just got that completely
doesn't
wrong.
It doesn't matter.
But he did, like, a whole bit on the Da Vinci Code. I'll send it to you.
Hilarious. You know what I found out about the Da Vinci Code is also the guy got sued later because he stole that idea from somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it was such a shit story to begin with, and you stole it from somebody else? Like, what's wrong with you?
Dude. That man's bank account disagrees with you.
Oh my god, Dan Brown, go eat one.
I loved that book when I read it. Like, I'm the lowest common denominator when it comes to books.
You don't read, that's the big thing. Sorry, Ashley, that's part of the reason we never really got back to you on your book, is it's still sitting in Ed's room.
Well, that and other things, but anyway. I recognize that. And I enjoyed the crap out of it. Now I recognize that, this was just, like, it's beach reading, right? It's like...
It's worse.
You know?
Like, no.
But I like John Grisham.
I'm a pretentious, asshole, right?
Yeah.
Like, sorry. Yeah. I read books like that, and it's like, it's insulting.
You don't like John Grisham?
It's insulting. No, I liked John Grisham when I was, like, 12.
Right.
When I wanted to become a lawyer. And I like it when it was, you know, I like the stuff that was made into films. I actually... you know, my father-in-law has loaned me the sequel to, what was it? And just saying the title, now I won't read it because I'm like, because we're having this conversation. It's called, there's like a time to kill and now it's like a time to die or something. And I was like, oh, fuck off. And the problem is, like, that's in his wheelhouse because he loves reading that kind of stuff. And so he gives it to me and he's like, I know you like John Grisham. Mm. And that's why it's probably sat on my shelf for like a year because I'm like,
Well, like, you know, again, the man made a lot of money. So producer.
Oh, cause that, so that must make it good, right?
No, no.
This is where the roles flip. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is where I put on my beret or my pen and paper.
Your beret. Start smoking. And a baguette under your arm.
I don't know. That's the problem.
That makes it good, I suppose.
I'm different as a writer than I am as a producer. That's the whole problem. And so, like, that's why, like, it's funny. I don't know if I'd ever be able to publish my own books if I ever wrote them, because I'm more interested in the story and making sure it's decent rather than if it sells copies or not. So, yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting. But, you know, to me, it's up there with, like, 50 Shades of Grey, mate.
Yeah, no.
I can't believe that sold so well. Like, wow, giving women something that's the equivalent of porn to them. Yeah. Like, okay.
I completely agree. And I'll put my hands up and say I am the lowest common denominator when it comes to this.
And spanking, you know? If only were that easy, you know? Only were that easy.
But the only thing that I do read that I think is quality is Terry Pratchett, though. That's my guy.
Yeah, but there's a whole... That's another weird sect in America. There is a whole... Or in England. Sorry, I'm getting my country's confused now. I've been here so long. Like, there is a whole group of you guys that don't read, but you read Terry Pratchett.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
It's weird.
I know. It's really weird.
I own it. I own my weirdness.
Always. Fly your weird flag.
That's right.
Loud and proud. I just always loved it when I met Ed. And this is the thing. Like, part of the reason I avoided going down the film path when I was younger, like when I was at least before I was 20, was because I was into books and I was into writing, and I always felt like films were a bit of a cheat, you know what I mean? Yeah. And there was that division between film people and book people. Oh, just watch the film. I'm like, fuck you, read the book. You know what I mean? Like, pick up a book and read it, you dumbass. You know what I mean? And stop trying to get the cliff notes from a movie. And so Ed and I have been best friends for a couple of years now. We've been friends for decades. And so we're talking one night, and he's like, I don't read, Jason. And
I'm
like,
don't.
What do you mean you don't read? You do D&D. And he's like, well, I read that, I don't read.
I'm terrible.
Tons of people like that. I know tons of people like that. I read a ton.
But the thing is that I know, like, when I have read great books, and again, you might laugh at this one, but Life of Pi, for example.
Never read it.
Absolutely fucking adored it.
Okay.
And, you know, it can be a very satisfying thing.
Absolutely. I mean,
and in terms of, like, inspiration for, you know,
stories. You know, my criticism of the world always based around the fact that I'm in my own head. You know, in my world, it's like you have to make entertaining stories all the time. Your books have to be thoughtful and have tons of good stuff because I like that stuff, even though lots of other people don't. You know what I mean? Like, and everything should start with horror. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't have the world exactly as you want it. And I think... It's funny, kids can help you with that. So music-wise, I've become so much a better musician, which is funny now, because now I can call myself that again, because I fucking play my guitar. I'll play it again tonight, won't I? But, you know, I was one of those people when I was playing guitar in my teens, I was like, I listen to punk, I listen to rock,
right.
I listen to rap, kind of, because it's cool, but I listen to that pop shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nowadays, like, I'm telling you, man, if you're not listening to pop music, man, you're missing out. Like, this happened with Ed, so... Because I go through my it's really great being older and having like the finger strength and the speed that I never had as a teenager. And so I literally will just go on my Apple Music and be like, okay, I want to learn some new songs today. So let's... And I called Ed and I was like, I have to apologize. And he's like, what the fuck are you apologizing for now? And it was like...
This time.
Yeah, this time, right? This time, right? And I was like, I have hated a particular musician for a really long time.
Yes.
Without ever having listened to his music. I heard like three of his songs and I'm in love with him now. Mm-hmm. So Ed Sheeran, if you're out there.
Ed Sheeran.
Sheeran, sorry. Mm-hmm. Is that Ed Sheeran?
No.
Man, I never remember anybody's fucking name. Ed. Yeah. I'm just going to call Ed because I got Ed here, and I've got Ed there, and I feel bad that I've got Ed there. Ed,
I've been on that bandwagon.
You've got to come hang out with us, man. You've got to come jam with us.
Like, his songs are great for like an acoustic guitar.
And you'll sing, and I'll sit there and be amused, and maybe I'll bring out my acoustic and start mimicking what you're
maybe
doing.
Maybe, shut up, you'd fucking pull it out before you said good afternoon.
Are you talking about the guitar?
Yes.
No, that's what I mean. Like, and it's good music. Like, it's stuff that, it's really I can good. See why it sells like crazy. Because, like, it's a good song. is it trite and stuff you hear all the time? That's part of why I said I was a bard now, because I got over the fact that like I don't want to play stuff that other people like. Like I want it, like the whole reason I have the guitar is so I can sit in a room and noodle with people and like so they have something to listen to. Like Becky loves just sitting around and I'll play something in the background while she's
you guys like not having the TV on.
Sometimes, yeah. You had the TV on and I was noodling behind because you. Because
I have a screen on.
But it still worked. It still, you were watching and I was noodling. It was amazing to me. I'm like, and we were still talking and conversing about both. I was like, this is awesome. This is the greatest thing ever. But that's what I mean. Like, you know, it used to, I guess as a teenager, the whole point was, and this is just me being very honest, you know what I mean? Like, the whole point was, I like to be in a room, in a party, mm-hmm. maybe by 10 or 12 girls there. Absolutely. You sit down with a guitar, and all of a sudden, you're the coolest. There's
nothing wrong with that.
If I could find a guy. 99%
of guitar players. If I could find a
guy who could sing, I can remember the nights. There was like, oh, do you know that song? I can sing that song. You and
my brother.
And then you're like, sit down, mate. And then all of a sudden, it was like, oh, we're now the two coolest people in the room.
You and my brother. Because my brother's got an amazing
he
voice.
He does, right? Oh, my God. Ian, get your ass over here. I'm sorry. You're about
he's
to be married.
He's had a guitar.
You're about to be married, and I'm married, so maybe that's a bad idea.
He's had a guitar for a while now as well, and he's learning to play it and stuff. But his voice is exceptional.
It's the kind of thing. So I'm trying to learn how to play and sing. I never did back in the day. I always wanted to be a lead guitarist. Now I could care less. I just want to play. So I can play a lot of rhythm stuff and then try to sing along. But at the moment, I can't do it. So it's kind of funny.
Do you know one song that I would love it if you learn how to play and I would sing for you?
Going to you with you. Because I didn't learn that. I need a capo for that.
There's that one. But no. you've seen The Three Amigos.
What song from The Three Amigos?
So there's a song where Martin Short's character is like scared of like sleeping outside, and Dusty, Chevy Chase's character, starts playing one of my all-time favorite songs. Yes, you know, it's not Blue River, but it starts very similarly. And, like, literally, dude, I will play that scene on YouTube and I'll sing along, like, before I go to sleep sometimes.
That's not too hard. That's what I mean. And that's the kind of thing, like, when you get... This is the guide for the musicians who aren't listening to this podcast. But once I got out of my own head and I stopped caring, my fingers did the work for me. That's the weirdest... Maybe that's why I like playing guitar, because I usually play between, like, 12:30 and 1:30. That's right before I go to bed if I'm not writing. And this is... We had to explain this to Catherine, because Catherine was like, I heard Daddy playing at like 1:30, and my wife just turns to her and looks, your father never sleeps. And she's like, correction, your father sleeps on the weekends. Because I don't. Like, I just have too much to do in my life, you know what I mean? And I've never slept anyway. Like, that's just the way I am. But it's weird that's like my decamp, is by playing, like, I'm not thinking about anything. I'm just playing, I want to hear it. So I'll be playing a song I want to hear.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my diatribe on guitar at the end of a film podcast. People going, what the fuck, Jason?
I mean, now you understand, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, I mean, to explain a bit of the background with that, just to go further down this rabbit hole that no one wanted to go down, you know, because we are, what are you guys talking about? Listen, like, I had not touched a guitar. I briefly been around a guitar maybe 3 or 4 times in 20 years. Because it hurt me so much that I stopped being a musician. Because it was dumb. And because it was because I didn't have insurance. And because I made a lot of excuses to why I was never going to get into it again. Like, when you get that feel again, and someone puts an instrument you can play in your hand and your back, like, it felt so good. Like, it just was like a part of me came back that had never been there before. And my family sees that. That's the coolest thing. When you're sitting around your family, like, wow, you really do love this stuff. I'm like, yeah, I told you I loved music. Anyway, same here with the film. So pick up that camera, get out there. I need to say this to myself, because I even have a camera hook. Yeah, I have a hook for the bag in my office now, where it just sits there, and I'm like, I gotta take that out today. Get your camera out there, go film something. I'm telling you, reinvigorate, get you back out there. But for The Matrix Resurrection, listen, we loved and hated this film, as you could tell. It disappointed the fanboy in us, but as a film, it is adequate, guys.
I would say that I neither loved nor hated it. I was like,
meh.
Satisfied, you know.
Meh.
Yeah, and I think that had a lot to do, like I said, with expectations and stuff like that. So if you can manage your own expectations,
that's right. And if the other thing I would say, if you are that wheelhouse and you watch The Matrix and you hated the second two and you want a conclusion, it's not really a conclusion, but you want something that gets you there. I think this film delivered that, right? It definitely takes you to a new point in the franchise that makes up for the fact that the old one dropped you in the river and said goodbye.
See ya.
You know what I mean? And we were like, what? You know? So that's what I mean. Like, the third one, I think, had too much ambitions for the fourth one. This one reels back those ambitions and says, okay, we're just going to tell you what happened to these two. Because it's a big world. You know what I mean? And I do hope that, you know, maybe this will go the Terminator style. Because the Terminator's had how many bombs and they just keep making them? Oh, and I'd still want one. I'd go. I didn't go see the last one, nor the one before that. But I tell you, if you make a Terminator film and you told me you didn't see the last two, I will go see this one just so you make it. Okay, I promise.
I think
actually, James, can you just not make Avatar 2 and make another Terminator, please, please?
But that's the thing. He's always like, oh yeah, I'm definitely involved in this one this time, and he's not. He's just cashing.
Are you kidding? The last one had Linda Hamilton, his ex-wife, in it. Right. I'm sure he was so close to set all the time. Oh, hi, Linda. How's that going for you? You're still an asshole, James. Shut up. So that's what I mean. And sorry, I don't mean to be shitting on James Cameron. No one needs to anyway. He probably, you know, he doesn't listen to podcasts, does he? So, you know what I mean? But that's this culminates on, I am serious about Avatar 2. If this is how bad it was for
when's
the Matrix.
When's that scheduled?
Next Christmas. And it's going to, unless James Cameron, and this will be like, this could happen, and it happens all the time, guys.
Ed Sheeran,
like, unless he pulls off the miracle on 34th Street for this, like, man, I'm gonna love doing this podcast and be like, here's the first one where I'm just gonna tell you the film sucks from the beginning. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
how can it be any good? How? And the worst is the way they hype up the last one. They were like, an Avatar, which was the biggest film of all time. I'm like, the fuck it was. Like, it was a good film. Don't get me wrong. But everybody walked out of that theater being like, I really like the 3D stuff. But
yeah.
That story was pants.
Yeah.
So anyway, folks, how do we just on James Cameron to end the show once again? I'm going to go home and watch some good directors on MUBI. And thank you very much for listening. I'm not sure what we're going to do next week. We might do Teddy, which I will explain on that podcast what that is. Everybody will watch that because it only takes up 35 minutes of your time. But I want to get into the weeds on that one because there's a reason that is such a well put together TV episode.
I'm down, but I'm not going to do any research. That's all going to be on you.
Okay. Yeah, he's just saying because it's a 30-minute show. So Jay, we're going to need a lot to talk about. Yeah. Trust me, never been a problem with me.
Okay. Good.
What would he do if I didn't end the show? All right, folks, I love you much. We'll catch you next time and see you on the flip side.
I would probably just turn it off. Bye-bye. Oh, I'm still rolling.